Hello, and welcome to the Valley Voices podcast. I'm your host, Vanessa Cirillo from New England Public Radio. This is where we share stories originally told live on stage at our Valley Voices Story Slams, produced with our friends at the Academy of Music Theater. On this episode, you'll hear the winners of the third slam of the season held at New City Brewery. The theme of the night was TMI, or too much information, and wow, did we hear a lot, friends, a lot. If you're squeamish, fair warning, this might not be the episode for you. Our first story comes from Anna Bowen, and we find out just how far she'll go for her mother.
Hello. My name is Anna Bowen, and it's kindergarten recess at Oaks Elementary School. And Rhett Walker is running around the playground, teasing me with taunts of, Anna's a virgin. We're 5 years old. Developmentally, there is only one appropriate response. No, I'm not. And immediately after school, Mommy, what's a virgin mean? My mother turns pink and she wipes her hands on her apron and she glances nervously at the clock to the door as if to magically will my father to come home early from work. No savior arrives and she speaks slowly and softly. A virgin is any woman that has never been touched by a man. Well, my father would tie my shoes and braid my hair, which is why I went to school the next day and told everybody I was not a virgin because my father touched me all the time. Kind of took a while to unwork that, but we did. Embarrassed as my mother was to talk about virginity, she was even more embarrassed to talk about puberty, so she just didn't. First time I got my period, I was on a road trip with my crazy drunk uncle. So at first I thought it was because he was hitting too many potholes, but around Kansas I realized not so much. So finally, the Ford Pinto needed gas. I went into the gas station to buy my first box of tampons, say to the attendant, can I please have the key to the bathroom? He looks at me and says, y'all don't need no key to the bathroom. That lock's been busted for a week. Just walk on in. That's what everyone else in town does. And that's how I found myself straddling a toilet bowl in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I got my left foot to brace me. My right foot is hooked underneath the doorknob. Tampon in my right hand, directions in my left. It was like a cross between the Statue of Liberty and Bruce Lee. And to answer your next question, no, nobody walked in on me because that would have been two cases of toxic shock syndrome simultaneously. My mother couldn't even talk about pooping. She had silly names like Ode to the Commode, making a deposit in the bank, putting a sculpture in the art gallery. Well, a couple of weeks ago, my mom was doing some hiking and camping in the White Mountains, popped in for a visit. She said her back was hurting her. Took her to the doctor. Doctor couldn't find anything wrong with her. But afterwards, she said to me, slowly and softly, I haven't made a deposit in the bank for 2 weeks. I think the pressure's hurting my back. That's what's causing my pain. See, she'd been too embarrassed to share that little tidbit with the doctor, instead choosing to ask me to help her with an enema. And that's how I found myself that evening, with my mother in the fetal position on my bed. I got the enema bottle in my right hand, I got the directions in the left. Step one, gently insert nozzle into your mother's rectum. Step two, squeeze all contents of bottle into your mother's rectum. Step three, wait for 3 to 5 of the longest minutes of your life. Well, I helped my mother ease from fetal position to child's pose. And when she gets up to go to the bathroom, I go to the kitchen sink to wash my hands and my arms and my eyes with bleach. No, in all sincerity, it really is not as bad to give your mother an enema as you might think. In fact, I felt good that I could support her in her time of need. I love my mother, and it is not her fault that she was raised in a time and a place where she was made to feel ashamed of being human and a woman. As soon as she walked in the kitchen, I could sense she felt much better. She looked at me and she smiled, and she said slowly and softly, "I just made a sculpture in the art gallery. 2 raisinettes, 4 Tootsie Rolls, and a hot fudge sundae." She said, "The good news is I'm feeling so much better. The bad news is my deposit was so big it clogged your commode. Honey, you're gonna need to plunge that." And then she said, "Thank you and good night."
Anna Bowen has been participating in Story Slam since 2015. When not standing behind a microphone, you can find Anna standing behind the counter at her shoe store in downtown Northampton. We definitely got our fill of TMI stories this season, but we're getting ready for season 6. Yes, people, season 6 of Valley Voices begins in February, and we've got some great themes, including Love Me Tinder, for all you with stories about dating in the modern world, to Around the Block, which may have you thinking about your downstairs neighbor or the street you grew up on. Whatever your story, we want you to audition to tell it when we open our phone lines for season 6 in just a few weeks. For details and more information, visit our website at nepr.net/valleyvoices. Matthew Dix is up next. He's going to take us through an awkward moment on a plastic couch.
My name is Matthew Dix. We're married 2 years when my wife and I decide to start making babies. Honestly, Alicia decides it's time to start making babies, and I decide that I want to stay married to my wife, so I go along with the prospect. It's not that I don't want to have kids. I want to have kids eventually. I just didn't think eventually would sneak up on me so quickly. And so we're in the doctor's office, and we're talking about genetic testing. Alicia's Jewish, so she has to be tested for Tay-Sachs, and I have to be tested for muscular dystrophy. It runs in my family. Not the childhood version of the disease, but a rare adult onset version of the disease. That's really terrible. It kills my grandmother and my aunt and my mother. We don't want to pass it on to the kids. Now, I don't have the gene in me. I know I don't because I'm asymptomatic. There's no signs of it. And it's on my mother's side, the Mandevilles. And I am my father's son. I am all Dicks, which usually is not a nice thing to say to someone, but in this case, it's very good for me. But I agree to get tested anyway. I assume it's a blood test, and the doctor says, "No, I need a semen sample." And I assume she's gonna send us home for an amusing night in bed with a plastic cup, but she says, "No, you need to go to a semen collection facility." And those three words, like, put fear in my heart. And it's justified, because when I pull into the semen collection facility a few days later, it's an old elementary school converted into a medical building. It still has the playscape on the end. And the last thing any human being should ever have to do is to walk into an elementary school to masturbate, particularly when they're an elementary school teacher, which I am. And so I go into the elementary school to masturbate, and I meet a nurse at the counter. She leads me down this hallway. It's about 12 feet long before we reach a door. It's 12 feet long. I am going to masturbate 12 feet from 4 nurses and 2 doctors and a room full of patients. I feel like the hallway should be 112 feet long, end at an elevator that brings me to some sub-basement, and I get to go to some hole where no one will know what I'm doing. But it's this, 12 feet. She pushes the door open. I can't believe the room. It's entirely pink. The carpet, the walls, the sofa. The sofa is wrapped in the plastic that your grandmother wrapped sofas in, which I find both relieving and disconcerting. She hands me a cup and she says, "No matter what you do, do not let your penis touch this cup." As if the stakes weren't high enough already for me. She says, "Do you have any questions?" And I do, I have one. I want to say, how long will it be before I'm in here so long that it gets awkward for the two of us when we come back together? Because this is going to be hard. I feel like masturbation is like a home field situation, and this is not my home field. But I can't ask that question because I am me, sadly. And so I go into this vagina-colored room, And I'm in there a really long time. And suffice it to say, the plastic around the sofa is both uncomfortable and loud and does not help in any way. But I do the job and I leave. And 3 days later, I'm standing at my classroom door waving goodbye to my fifth graders when my phone rings and it's the doctor. And she says, listen, the test was positive. And I think she means positive in a good way. And so I tell her that and she says, no, it's not positive in a good way. You have the gene. And then I assume I misunderstand the disease, that maybe it's a recessive gene, that it skips me but could go on to our children. And she tells me, no, you're going to get that disease someday. And then she says, you need to sit down so I can talk to you. And I can barely stand up. And when we're done talking, I'm sitting at my desk in my classroom. And I am imagining this future that I have always imagined for myself. These hopes and dreams that I have had. And now there is this shadow just thrown over them. That I have this bomb in my body that I've had since the day I was born, the day I was conceived. And I'm just waiting for the day that it will go off. And I live with that shadow for a long, long time. And then one day a miracle happens. We have that baby, Clara. And the nurse hands me that baby in that operating room, and I look at Clara for the first time, and our eyes meet. And we have this moment that I never want to end. And when that one is done, we have another one right after that, and another one. And now I have Charlie 2 years later, and I've got these two kids, and every day is filled with thousands of moments. And I'm not fooling myself. I know that bomb is in me and it's going to go off someday. But what I know now is that even though eventually, someday, something's going to happen to me, I have 100 million moments between me and that day. And hopefully that will be enough. Thank you.
That was Matthew Dix. His story won the night and also took home the trophy at the Best of Valley Voices Story Slam, the conclusion of our season in September. Congratulations, Matt. Matt is an elementary school teacher and best-selling novelist, the artistic director of Speak Up, and the author of the book Storyworthy, Engage, Teach, Persuade, and Change Your Life Through the Power of Storytelling. Want to keep up on what's happening around the region, from storytelling open mics to workshops and everything in between? Join our Facebook group, Valley Storytelling Community. We post our podcasts there too, along with audition deadlines for Valley Voices, video from recent slams, and more. And now for our last story on the theme TMI, which comes from Kevin Gallagher. He shares a story about his apprehensive visit to the proctologist.
Can a man maintain his dignity and sense of self-respect with his head down and his ass in the air? I don't think I'm that unusual that I waited longer than I probably should have to make the appointment with the proctologist. It's not really something anyone really looks forward to. I discovered years prior in my colonoscopy, that was also another adventure, that I had some hemorrhoids that needed to be taken care of. Now, I can tell you that the potential for embarrassment and humiliation at a proctologist's office is extremely high. I walked in on a crisp fall morning, quite delighted, not really, to actually recognize the receptionist because it's someone I used to work with 10 years ago. Oh my God, Kevin, it's so good to see you. How are you? Do you still live in Burlington? What are you doing? It's like, hi, Diane. I'm good. Well, what are you doing here? And it's like, you know, the usual. And she's like, oh, right. Yeah, just have a seat. So I perused the magazines, you know, Colon Health and AARP, Reader's Digest, you know, Cancer Today. Eventually the nurse comes out and, you know, quite proudly and loudly, Kevin Gallagher. So everyone got to know it was my turn on the table. But I have to tell you, if you've not been to a proctologist's office, their tables are different than regular doctor's tables. Like, yes, it's a table, and you sit on it, and they, you know, do your blood pressure and your temperature. But then when you take off your clothes and put on the Johnny with the back open, you lay on the table, and the front part goes down, and the back part goes down, and then this, like, little kneeler thing comes up. So basically, you're kneeling with your butt in the air and your head down. And it was in that position that I met the proctologist, Dr. Hyman. Look him up, Neil Hyman. I said hello, and I, you know, from my vantage point upside down, you know, he seemed kind of nice, good looking, you know, had a nice, soft, round face with big blue eyes. Sort of looked a little bit more like a pediatrician than a proctologist, but I'm not sure what a proctologist is supposed to look like Mitch McConnell or it's like somebody. So I said hi, and he said, "Now I have Amanda here. She's a medical student. Do you mind if she sits in on the appointment?" And I'm like, "You know, I'm really not in a position to negotiate. So sure, you know, hi Amanda, welcome." So he takes out his stainless steel icy cold aniscope and goes in and says, "Oh my goodness, you do have some hemorrhoids." And it's like, "Yes, we've already established that." I said, "But do I need surgery?" And he said, no, we don't like to operate down there. It's very messy, very messy. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna do a rubber band ligation." And I thought, oh, well, that to me sounded like some sort of like spinner toy that a lawyer would use or something. And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "Well, I take the aniscope and I put very tight rubber bands at the base of each hemorrhoid and it just sort of suffocates it." Well, in terms of how procedures go, it was quick and painless. The table goes back up, I turn around to sit up, and I black out. So I wake up on the floor in the arms of Dr. Hyman with his big moon face looking at me. And I said, "Oh, I'm very sorry, doctor." And he said, "Let me help you up." And so I get back up on the table, and he's telling me about my aftercare plan. But I'm looking at him, that big face, and his voice is getting fainter and fainter, and down I go again. But this time, I took out with me the red medical waste basket. So there were needles all over the floor. But when I opened my eyes this time, and he was still there, I was embarrassed, "It's you, it's your face. Your face is making me faint. Get your face out of here." So he sends in the nurse. She said, "This happens all the time. It's a vagal response." I tried to get up again. I went down again. I said, "You know, I didn't eat dinner or breakfast because I didn't know what we were doing today. And so I think I'm hungry. Do you have any food here?" And she's like, "No, not really. We're ordering lunch at noon." I'm like, "I can't stay all day." I said, "Wait, Diane, the receptionist, she had a half a bagel on her desk when I checked in. Can you see if she finished it?" So she comes back 5 minutes later with a half a bagel, a small bag of chips, and some orange juice, and I was able to leave. But 2 weeks later, I went in for my checkup, my post-operative, it wasn't really an operation, but my post-something checkup, and Dr. Hyman could not have been prouder of his work. He said, "Your butt is ready to go." It's like, "Thank you." And I sort of thought, he's treating me as somebody who is sort of worth dignity and self-respect. But inside, I could only feel silent embarrassment and a dash of humiliation. Thanks.
That was Kevin Gallagher sharing outside his cultural context. The Irish, he says, tend to keep their dirty laundry private. Kevin somehow missed that lesson in school. Our fourth episode of the season will feature stories on the theme Busted. Our storytellers interpret our themes in all sorts of ways, but we're sure to have some stories about how people were found out. If that entices you, be sure to subscribe to the Valley Voices podcast on Apple Podcasts so you don't miss a second. Leave us a review and help us grow our storytelling community while you're there. You can also find us on Stitcher and at nepr.net/podcast hub. Valley Voices Story Slam is produced by New England Public Radio and the Academy of Music Theater, with special thanks to our Season 5 venues, Gateway City Arts, New City Brewery, and Hawks and Reed Performing Arts Center. Big thanks also to Holyoke Media, East Hampton Media, and Greenfield Media. Thanks to them, you can watch all the stories shared on Valley Voices on our website, nepr.net/valleyvoices. Until then, Keep your ears open for a good story and check out some of New England Public Radio's other podcasts, like The Great God of Depression, produced by longtime NEPR reporter Karen Brown. The Great God of Depression won a Webby Award earlier this year in the Best Miniseries category, and it's so damn good. Go listen, really. Look for The Great God of Depression on the NEPR Podcast Hub or wherever you find podcasts. Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Valley Voices Podcast. See you next time. You have a story to tell me, but I'm afraid to even hear of it. Too much information. I'm sure that you might take some liberties and think you can abuse this. Too much information. We have a fence, and that's great. But must we share everything when you do it? Or am I mistaken and we are closer than I even knew of it? Too much information. Too much information. Secrets into my ear. Too much information. A good idea, cause your story should never be for anyone to hear. Too much info. You seem amused, and that's not great. Yeah, what must I do to get away from your phone? Or am I mistaken and we are closer than I ever knew? Too much information. Too much information. Too much information. Too much information.